BBC notes, and I see happen for Lakers. Go wake up the neighbor. Oh, BBC, your BBC. Go get your BBC, your BBC, your BBC. We are show your BBC, your BBC, your BBC. Go get your BBC, your BBC, your BBC. We are show your BBC. Till you ready to vote, make you no sell your vote. Till you ready to vote, make you no spoil for road. Till you ready to vote, make you no sell your vote. Till you ready to vote, make you no spoil for road.
FM. Democracy does not begin and end on election day, so citizens must form the habit of holding their elected leaders accountable. As a result, Connected Development, in partnership with Oxfam Nigeria, is bringing you Follow the Money, a 30-minute radio program aimed at advocating for informed governance in the extractive sector to enhance human rights and conflict-sensitive operations. Join UK Auger and Ifangetum fortnightly on Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. to listen and participate on how we can move our country forward when we follow the money. Follow the Money is powered by Connected Development and Oxfam Nigeria, exclusive to Hit 95.9 FM.
Should say Happy New Year to the team at Oxfam Nigeria Connected Development Code, because this is the first edition of your fortnightly program on spotlighting the goings on in the extractive sector. Welcome to Follow the Money. My name is UK, and of course we have my co-host on Follow the Money, Efanga Etim here. Efanga, Happy New Year.
Same to you, UK. Good morning.
You know, your voice doesn't sound like you're ready to follow the money. You need to sound like you're ready.
We're actually ready this year to follow the money. All right.
So Follow the Money is?
Yeah, Follow the Money, it's a program, a movement introduced by Connected Development, you know, to checkmate the spending of public funds by public office holders. So for today, we'll be looking at, is the PIA serving the development need of oil bearing communities? Is the PIA serving the development
That's the Petroleum need, Industry Act.
Yes, of oil bearing communities. And today we
That's what we're talking about. And that means our focus is still
on the PIA.
On the PIA and the extractive industry.
Exactly, yes. Right. And the communities where this stuffs are being carried out.
Just to let our listeners know that this program, of course, is brought to you by
Oxfam Connected Development. And Connected Development.
Which is implementing the Power Voices Fair for All program, right?
Yes.
So this program is not just here, it's also on social media.
Yeah.
And you can connect with Code.
Yes, you can connect with Code at Connected_Dev. And also you can, you know, chat us up on WhatsApp with this number, 081-7183-0717.
All right. Today's conversation is an interesting one, and we're looking at how the PIA is serving the developmental needs of oil-bearing communities. Well, we're going to explain a lot of terms in there. Oil-bearing, what does it mean, and why are we focusing on them exclusively today? And, you know, all of the other terms that are included in that title. Our guest on Connected Development today is the managing editor of Cross River Watch. We have Mr. Jeremiah Archibald. Good morning, Jeremiah Archibald.
Good morning, UK. Good morning,
Follow the Money.
All right. So, Mr. Jeremiah, good morning. It's so nice having you on board today.
Thank you.
We want to know, with respect to the oil-bearing communities. How do we address the issues of statesmen siphoning funds directed towards the development of these communities where these activities are being carried out?
Okay, first, when you talk about siphoning money, we need to understand that properly, because money cannot just be siphoned like that. It has to be through projects, through other activities, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The PIA is supposed to address issues that involves host community, because over time host communities have been saying that, look, we are not carried along and we need to have a say, you know. So the PIA will help us achieve bringing the host community on board. But now, how do we stop siphoning of money
exactly.
and other things through SPVs and projects,
exactly.
you know?
Every term that we use on this show, in this conversation, I'd like us to explain it, right? Because we cannot approach from the assumption that people know these things, right? So SPVs, what are we talking about? Host communities, oil-bearing communities. Let's be a bit grassrootsy in our discussion.
Okay, when you talk about host communities, it means the community where these projects are hosted. For example, you have UNISEM Lafarge today in Akampa, right? And it has other branch in Akwabuyu. But you see...
So Akampa would be a host
community.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And when you talk about projects, of course, what do they want to do? You know, build school, health facilities, scholarship, whatever it takes, right? Now, SPV are special purpose vehicles. These are projects that you might not see, you might not know, or you might not see them in the form that you think they should be, but they are projects and is allowed in a way. Now, how do we stop siphoning of money? You see that a lot of challenge we have with host community and social responsibilities with these companies is that they do not really want to implement projects that will touch the heart of the people. For example, 2012-2013, we had issues with UNISEM, which I was also actively involved in. What was the challenge? Host community were not properly carried along in the activities of the company. The company just, you know, in a way deal with some set of people, and at the end of the day, it does not trickle down. There was protest, staffs revolt, a lot of things did not go well. Now, the PIA in a way trying to address this has said that, look, the settler in, I think in section 234, right? The settler has to incorporate the host community trust organization. That means that the company will be the one to facilitate the CAC process of this organization. But would that be to the interest of the people? Because one, Company A might decide that I want to register this organization, right? Company B might decide to register another organization, right? And when this happens, you now have proliferations and it becomes a competition. In that way, the PIA will not serve our purpose. It is better a community has a single organization that is registered by the community. If the company wants to facilitate it, registration is once in a lifetime. So a company can facilitate it, but let there be a singular organization registered and owned by the community. Yes, you now have a board of trustees to oversee what happens. Before, in some of these organizations, you do not have these functions, these bodies, right? So, but how do we stop siphoning corruption? That's
now,
the major
according
issue.
To Mr. Jeremiah, this PIA, you know, spells out for the Health Community Development Trust as the HCDTs, or the establishment of a board of trustees to be headed, as you mentioned the board of trustees, but it's to be comprised or constituted largely by members of that community, selected by the community, from the community. Is that not where the responsibility lies on the owners, the landlords, the community people themselves to take responsibility for their destiny?
We are saying the same thing, but it doesn't mean the same thing. This is what I mean. This organization, as far as you're going to register the organization, it's a charitable organization in CAC, a foundation, a community organization, right? It must have a board of trustees and it must have a physical structure. Yes, there's a template by CAC, which is that the board takes certain decision.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the PIA, there will be a metrics of fund disbursement, which the board will take care of.
Yes.
But that is not the issue.
What is the issue?
It says that, I think in section 234, it says that the company, the settler, has to register the company, has to incorporate the company. Company A might decide to incorporate an organization with this name. Company B might come and say, since it is my responsibility to incorporate, I will incorporate another organization. If you have 20 companies in a community, you are sure to have maybe 10, 15, you know.
Is that a realistic number? Let's look at the actuality on the ground. Is that a realistic number? Now, I'm talking this way because it's my responsibility to ask these questions from whatever side of the conversation might not be fully represented here today. Is it a realistic thing to imagine that they would have multiple and multiple companies in one community settling and doing oil exploration and oil boring? Or is it consecutively? Are you going to have multiple, like you said, 20? Is that number not too fast? One. Then two, if indeed you have multiple companies, multiple settlers in a community, is it wrong or is it going to inhibit the development of that community if you have different facets, different groups of that community all contributing from their own different trust, development trust, and their own boards? Does it not mean more development for the community? How does it work against the goal of development in that community? Or foster siphoning?
It's a two-way thing. It might work positively, it might not work positively. Now, when you talk about host community, it is not restricted to maybe a particular village, or a host community can be a state in a sense. For example, Lafarge operates in two local governments, and you have host community that operates for those local governments. Now, if a company comes and say that I want to invest and this is the place I want to invest, yes, I don't think the government might say no, but there's a template which does not allow, you know, you can't have maybe 10 different petroleum activities going on in a cluster.
Exactly.
But in a sense, you have some operating for more than 3 locations, which means that you have a larger host community. In that sense, when you have proliferation, you are sure that there will become interest, competition. And some of this competition from history has not been healthy. Let us not forget what happened in UNISEM. 2012, 2013, it started 2010. The reality is that you end up have different factions. You end up have different group of people. Let the community be the one to incorporate a single organization. But if the settler, which is the visitor coming to establish, is the one mandated to create or incorporate that organization, I might decide as a settler that I don't want to deal with these people.
Okay, so here's where our parallels are not exactly lining up. We're talking about, yes, the extractive sector, but the focus is on oil, right? And this timeline that you just gave for the cement company
is an illustration,
but it is before the PIA, before the PIA actually came to light. So we're going to look at what the provisions of the PIA do to settle, which our focus today is on siphoning of funds. And halting of development, right? So we're going to get back on track and get back there. At least that is one part where we can comfortably discuss on, because if we continue on this tangent, we will just keep going at parallels, right? So back to the settlers in the oil sector and in the oil-bearing communities. What can be done to ensure that community development is effectively implemented and not have funds siphoned and corruption and other such things happen?
You see, everything is connected. The fact that you will have the settler incorporate an organization gives the settler the choice as to which project to undertake. When you talk about siphoning and corruption, they are the same thing, because you siphon money for a wrong benefit. How do we stop it?
I didn't want to take you down there, but you've taken us back there to say it is connected. Here is the thing. The community has a board of trustees comprised of members of that community.
For an organization.
Not for an organization. For the community.
For the community.
According to the PIA, it's for the community. Now, the organization has a responsibility to help set up that committee. It does not mean that it is the name of the organization.
No, it is an organization for the community. But where do you get this from? No, you said it is an organization for the community.
It's for the community.
Yes, that's what I'm saying as well. But where I'm drawing your attention to is that the settler, the investor should not be the one mandated to incorporate that organization. That's just my point. I'm not saying that.
Is it in their name or in the name of the
company? I don't know any name, but the settler, okay, according to section 234,
because I
is
must
the
arrive,
one mandated.
Mr. Jeremiah, I mean, I've been doing this show for a long time now, so that's a prerequisite to even be on this chair. Mr. Jeremiah, because of the discussion that we want to have today, right? The discussion is on siphoning of public funds and halting development in the host communities. Let's go with what you're saying. Now, you say that is a problem. What other problems are there? Is that the only problem you've highlighted?
That's not the only
problem. Let's talk about the other problems that you have.
Now, when you talk about, corporate social responsibilities, which is the only way communities can fuel these companies, right? The best thing to do is to ensure that the procurement law is followed to the end. I've investigated projects, 6.9 billion, huge sum. At the end of the day, what do we discover? We discover that the procurement law in some states, in some areas, are not being followed the way they are supposed to. For example, you have a project that is supposed to be a health facility for community A. And at the end of the day, you get to realize that that project might be implemented, but not as specified. You get to discover that the company that got that project or that contract might not be a company that is recognized by the law, because you have so many companies not registered. For example, I did a 6.9 billion investigation into projects, new projects by the Cross River State Government in 2019. I discovered that out of over 10 companies that executed 30 projects, 7, their records could not be found in CAC. That's a breach of the procurement law, which is to ensure that corporate social responsibility and government activities are properly actualized for the community. The PIA ensuring that monies are not siphoned, for me it's one of the audacious documents we've had in that sector, right? It's one of the most audacious documents we've had, but the reality is that implementation become another problem.
Okay, so these things you've highlighted, I mean, giving us an example of the work that you've carried out in your investigative work, how can the community contribute to making sure that projects that ought to be actually come to life, and the right way too? Because there are two things you've mentioned this morning: siphoning, maybe corrupt practices, but even the implementation, yes, we've seen it, but it's not done how it ought to be done. So how can communities ensure or hold these companies or the settler itself accountable to make sure that the right thing is done?
From my experience, the communities have always been involved, because before you implement some of these projects, you ought to go to the community, but some communities are not carried along. A case study: a school is supposed to be built in a community. You did not go to the community to talk to the community per se, right? Because in your thinking, they don't have enough space, you moved the school to another community without even consulting with the community. Remember, every project of government is to serve the need of the community, and it is expected to improve the livelihood of the people. So if a project based on need assessment is supposed to be in this community, need assessment process means you must engage the community. Most of the time, they engage the community, they try to follow the process, but in the actual implementation, we've had situations where community writes petition, protest, does all they need to do within their legitimate rights. At the end of the day, nothing tangible comes out.
Does the PIA address this with the host community development trust, with the board of trustees? Does it address this? So you know these are the people you must talk to, you must liars with them, you must, you know, pass through this process before you get to do whatever it is we want to do. And in fact, they're the ones who implement now, because they tell you this is what we want to be done, and out of the monies that I've paid to them, they can now do what they need to do. Does PIA address this concern that you've raised of not carrying the community along, in spite of the fact that you maybe consulted them at the beginning?
According to section 235, which mandates the settler to incorporate that organization, right? It's a good decision. But the truth is that Yes, it will limit the challenges that is currently existing to a certain percentage. That's a plus. But how would we make sure that the procurement process that has continuously been flawed is not flawed in this project implementation? That becomes issues where you need authorities to come out. A community cannot petition a contractor that you've paid $145 million to go and build a school. And at the end of the day, they built the school. There's no lavatory. Okay. How do you do that? What do the students use? What do the teacher use?
We're going to bail this cat in a minute, Mr. Jeremiah Achibong. This is Follow the Money, brought to you by Connected Development Code, Oxfam Connected Development, powered by Fair for All Power Voices Project. You can be a part of this discussion now by calling the studio number 0700-959-44836. The number is 0700-959-44836. You can also send us WhatsApp messages via the number
0817183017 0817183017.
And the conversation is still on the development needs of oil-bearing communities, right? Development need of oil-bearing communities. Do you think the provisions in the PIA can guarantee the developmental needs of oil-bearing communities? I mean, we're talking about experiences in line of abandoned projects. People of the Niger Delta are not strangers to abandoned projects.
Every day, same.
The South-South region funds, in particular.
And sometimes establishing projects that are irrelevant to the community.
I want to bring something to your knowledge also. For us, at Follow the Money, I think it's one reason why we are having this program. We want to encourage the citizens to speak up. We track the spending of public funds,
Let me interrupt you just for a second and take this call. Hello, good morning. Trapped call. Call us back if that was you. 0700-959-44836. This is Follow the Money, brought to you by Connected Development, implemented by Oxfam, of course.
All right. So I was saying, for us at Follow the Money, we encourage the citizens to speak up. Now, most of them might not really have this, power to speak for fear of, preserving their lives or stuff. Reach out to organizations. The last time we had a guest last year, Jonathan, he spoke about the same thing. Reach out to organizations that can do the talking for you.
Jeremiah is saying that speaking up by communities is not really the issue. Because communities are speaking, but they're not getting the solution. So I want him to tell us what he thinks the way forward is.
The way forward, there's a component in every law, we have beautiful laws in this country. We know how to write them all. But implementing them becomes the issue because of the bottleneck in the civil service. There's a monitoring and evaluation mechanism, which means that projects must be monitored and evaluated.
Yeah.
How do you certify that this project is complete when you cannot see the project? It happened to me. Project completed, I went to the community and the community has not seen that project.
So what to do?
What we need to do is we need to strengthen organizations that are bringing this fact to life, and at the same time encourage law enforcement organizations to step up and become the organizations that they were meant to be. You cannot have a situation of clear-cut corruption and EFCC and ICPC are not taking it serious. What we need to do to ensure this thing comes to an end, if it can come immediately, is to continue speaking out. Investigative journalists goes around, risks their life, try to bring these things to bear. The community are trying, because some of these community members risks their life to get us to these places and ensure that, we tell the story the right way. When you tell this story, authorities ought to, act on it. You have a civil service commission.
The same authorities you have investigated.
It might not be the same authority. You might have a project that involves Ministry of Petroleum, right? And when that project, there's any suspicion of corruption or, siphoning of money through elephant projects.
You now expect EFCC, ICC,
apart from EFCC. I'm sure there should be a desk, there should be a directorate within that is supposed to be
within
playing
where?
within the organization.
What organization?
The ministry, you know,
the errant ministry.
Let's not use the word the errant ministry.
No, because I want to paint the picture and make it really clear. Because sometimes we do a lot of perspire to acquire without actually giving people something to hold on to. This is the solution we brought to you. So when you say a desk within the ministry, I think about the ministry that has supervised the project that was completed yet not completed. The ministry that has given the M&E approval.
The way civil service works, mm-hmm. one is connected to another.
Mm-hmm.
Ministry of Petroleum Resources want to implement a project in, say, Unyanga.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Unyanga. At the end of the day, Unyanga community say what we need is school, is a primary school, right? They need to build or construct this primary school. Now, in doing that, it means that if sometimes the project might not just be executed alone by the ministry, they might pass through other ministries like Ministry of Education. In a way, Ministry of Education monitoring and evaluation team become involved because it's an education project. Why won't they see that there's something wrong? Because you build a primary school, the primary school is not up to standard. 2 months into the school is already collapsing.
So what
and
do you do?
What we need to do is to ensure that the law enforcement agent...
Please, let's go on with this example. Ministry of Petroleum and Education, what do you
okay,
do?
In that sense, we have already... A lot of people, community, have been doing... writing petitions, taking it up with that same authority, but you don't get any solution. But what we need to do to get the actual solution is to strengthen the agencies that are mandated by law.
Okay. Well, it's been a very interesting conversation, and I think that this is the kind of discussions that we need as a people all the time, not just on the radio, in our social spaces, everywhere. But we've got to wrap it up this morning. Mr. Jeremiah Archibong, is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion, even as we wrap up?
What I would like to say is that please let's vote for candidates. It's election season.
Yes, it is.
We need to ensure that we vote for candidates that understand our plight. If you're an oil producing community and all the candidates coming to you are not telling you that, look, this is what we will do, and it connects directly to your need, your wants, please do not vote that candidate. And at the same time, let us vote and not fight, because election will be war. By the time we begin fighting, you ensure at the end of the day, you know, we'll not have peaceful elections. So,
thank you very much, Jeremiah Chipong. Thank you for your words this morning.
Efanga,
we've got to draw the curtain on this really interesting conversation, but we
really
must remind all of our listeners that if they have any issues they'd like to spotlight, maybe there are issues they want to report from their communities concerning the oil industry, the PIA, and its implementation, they can reach out to Connected Development.
They can reach out to Connected Development on 081-718-30-717.
Would you take the number again slowly?
081-871-830-717. And we also want to urge our listeners to speak up. It's not just saying these things and keeping quiet. We need you guys to speak up.
That's why you're giving them the numbers to reach out to.
Yes, to reach out.
All right. Thank you very much, Efanga. This is where we draw the curtains on Follow the Money for today. A fortnight away from now, we're going to have this conversation again. That's 2 weeks, 2 Wednesdays from now.
Yes.
Don't forget that the Follow the Money program was brought to you by Connected Development with support from Oxfam, implemented the Power of Voices Fair for All project within the extractive state of the Niger Delta.
Yeah.
We've got to go. Stay with us.
My name is